Welcome to the Agile Career Podcast, where we will take you on the journey from employed for life to employable for life. We'll give you the tips, insights, and strategies to help you build the transferable skills that you'll need. So let's get started. Please welcome your host, Günther Richter.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to the next episode of the Agile Career Podcast. I had already been planning on putting out an episode today, and the funny thing was I opened up Twitter this morning and there was a tweet where I was tagged, and it was a tweet from a platform called FeedSpot, and the reason they included me in the tweet was to recognize the Agile Career Podcast as being one of the best 20 career podcasts in the UK. And it was like a surprise, you know, the first sort of thing to see in the morning before you even check out your emails or anything like that. And I was really taken aback, and you know, now that it's sunk in, I'm really honored to have been recognized, or for the podcast to have been recognized as one of the top 20 career podcasts in the UK. So thank you, FeedSpot, for doing that. It was a fantastic start to the day. It's great recognition for the podcast, and it makes me really happy because the start of the podcast almost sort of coincided with the start of the pandemic. And, you know, it wasn't planned out to be like that. It was just coincidental. And, you know, everyone has had a really tough time, I think, in the last 18 months or so, a little bit more than 18 months. And I think it's been even worse for, you know, job seekers and career changers. So, you know, there's this recognition from FeedSpot, hopefully is reflected in the fact that these episodes have resonated with people that are going through career transitions, be they career changes or looking for new jobs. And, you know, hopefully these episodes have been helpful for people that have been listening and have really made a change in their life. So, yeah, I'm really, really happy about this. It was a fantastic start to the day. It's great news for the podcast, and I think it's testament as well to the listenership and, you know, the people that tune into the episodes that I put out there. So, you know, thank you to everyone who has made this possible, especially to my guests. I mean, this show really wouldn't be what it is without the guests. I've got some great notes in from some of the guests that have appeared based on today's news. So I'm really grateful for that, and even more grateful for the effort that the guests do put into the shows, you know, appearing on them and talking to me and answering the sort of sometimes awkward questions, I suppose, that I ask. So, thank you to everyone who's been a part of the show. It's massively appreciated, and I'm really looking forward to the show going from strength to strength. So that being said, excitement over. Actually, before excitement is over, what I would like to say is there's another 19 or so other podcasts that have been, mentioned in the same category. And what I really would encourage listeners to do is to go and check out those podcasts too. So if you found value in this podcast, you'd absolutely find value in the other ones. What I will do is post the link in the show notes so you can go and check out those other podcasts. Take a listen to them and, you know, absolutely get the value that you've got from this podcast, from those podcasts as well. So also recognition of my fellow podcasters focusing on the sort of career niche. Congratulations on your placement in the top 20. I'm really happy to see you there too. And, you know, really happy to stand shoulder to shoulder with you. So that being said, we're going to get onto today's subject, and this one is titled The Lessons That I've Learned from Teaching Children's Rugby or Youth Rugby. And I've been coaching rugby for about 8 years now. I've moved through the youth groups from under sixes to under 14s as my son has progressed. That's the reason I started coaching. And I'm not going to give away too much because I'm going to talk a little bit in detail about all of the stuff that I've learned. But I think there's so many things that we can take away from sport generally, and in this case specifically from coaching, straight into leadership lessons. And you know, the more and more I look at the similarities between the two, it's wow. And that's why I wanted to get a little bit of detail down talking about those things that I've learned. Just before we get into the detail, I would like to apologize for the quality of the rest of the podcast, the audio quality, that is. I wasn't using my normal mic. I was recording on the go. So the quality of the content will be the same as before. It's just the audio. Please enjoy. Hello, everyone. I wanted to take this opportunity to talk about coaching sport and the lessons we can take away into the leadership world. For many of us, I think the smell of bacon and fresh coffee, eggs sizzling in the pan, freshly buttered toast, perhaps even reading the Sunday papers are the ideal way to spend a Sunday morning. It hasn't been for me. I tend to prefer the 2 hours I spend outdoors on the rugby pitch, teaching teams of youth players to play rugby. And aside from the rewards of teaching anything that's worth learning, I think, you know, it gets me to spend more time with my son who plays in the same age group. And also, the more time I spend out on the pitch, the more I learn about myself. And this is after 8 years of coaching, and, you know, there are still things to learn. So what are the sorts of things that you tend to learn about? Well, you know, there's the obvious things, such as the laws of rugby. There's the mechanics of the game, the basic skills that one requires. But more importantly, I think it's the experience that I gain from having to deal with behaviors that I'm confronted with. And that's the invaluable experience. You know, even as the players get older and obviously better at the sport, it comes with its own challenges. They're teenagers and, you know, emotions ride high. You know, there are a lot of challenges that you end up dealing with. So I'm just finding that these lessons, I think, are invaluable in that they add to other areas of my life, you know, most notably managing a team of adults in the workplace. You know, how can this be? How can managing 20 to 30 teenagers to deal more effectively, or how can these help us deal more effectively with everyday things? Well, let's take a look. I've highlighted a few lessons that I've taken away. Hopefully some of these resonate with you. If they do, give us a shout and let's have a chat about them. The first one is that sometimes you need to work with what you're given. In the corporate world, ideally, you get to choose the teams you work with. You interview and select new hires that you think can do the job and fit into the organization. Unfortunately, though, this is not always the case, and you'll often end up with team members that you might not have chosen in the first place. You know, think of restructures, think of placements, and sometimes even working with client resources. And so it is with youth rugby. The parents of the kids are choosing for them to be there and not us as coaches. And this means a mixed bag of abilities, personalities, and attitudes. You need to be able to work with them all. You need to be able to take the good and the bad. And, you know, it's also absolutely not about focusing on trying to improve an individual's weaknesses, but rather identifying their strengths and building on these. The other thing, and this is a big one, is that even top performers have bad days. Every business, like any team, sports team, has its star performer or performers. You know, this is very notable on the rugby pitch. Sometimes in an organization, it's not that obvious. But really, even those stars on your team are going to have a bad day. You know, it might be a bad game for a sports star or a bad project for a team member. But what's important is how your top performer deals with and learns from this. And that's something that as a coach, either of a sports team or an organization, we're there to help those individuals deal with and learn from. The next thing is that peer pressure counts for more than you think. It shouldn't be surprising to see how an individual, an influential individual or a group often affects the behaviors of a larger group. It only takes one kid to start running around the pitch screaming that the hair's on fire, and all of a sudden they'll all be doing it, you know, and it's really frustrating. It's a real challenge to deal with. And in organizations, I think you and I all know this is company culture. It can often scuttle projects or initiatives, and it needs to be carefully understood and managed. New joiners are very quick to pick up on the habits of the larger group. And hopefully these habits are more positive than negative. Usually it's a mix. And, you know, that's why it's something that we need to be aware of, both in sports teams and in organizational teams.
The next thing that I've learned is that everybody has baggage. You know, everyone brings along their backstory to the organization or to the team. They bring along their own idiosyncrasies, you know, whether it's a 14-year-old or a 40-year-old. It could be a parent's insecurity, or it could be a failing in a previous job. These are the things that contribute to who that person is today. And these are the things that you as a leader or coach have to deal with on a regular basis. And I think the key to dealing with these idiosyncrasies is understanding where they came from. If the player is a bad sport, chances are that the parents are the same. If a team member constantly takes on too many tasks, it could mean they have problems delegating, for example. Are these things that can be changed? Absolutely. And if you're going to do this, you need to address the cause and not the symptoms. Addressing the symptoms is a short-term gain, short-term solution. Addressing the cause is obviously, you know, getting in long-term improvements. So some of these you won't be able to change, unfortunately. These you just need to accept and move on and just work around. The next big lesson is that commitment varies. Not everyone is there because they want to be. Well, you know, this is especially true in children's sports, because let's be honest, some of the kids are pushed into activities by their parents. The same can be said for the corporate environment. You know, most employees choose their jobs to a degree. Some don't want to be there, and some are just there for the wrong reason. You know, you'll often get comments like, it's just a job, it pays the bills, or I'm only doing this because I can't get the job I wanted. All of these things are things that you do here around the workplace. The downside of these types of team members is that they can really have a disruptive and negative impact on the balance of the team, and these situations need to be carefully managed. One approach, and I'll talk about this in a little bit more in a little bit later, is to get these team members more engaged and have them realize the value of them being part of a larger team. Have them understand, obviously, what that team is aiming for, what the team vision is, you know, where the projects are going, whatever it is, and have them realize their importance in the team and the role that they've got to play on that team. That is absolutely vital. To that point, then, the next big takeaway is that team members need to be engaged. Anyone that's not actively involved in a game quickly gets bored. This is true both of your strong members and weaker team members. Keeping them all engaged is very important, and it's also the best tactic to get disinterested people involved. One of the best methods I've found for doing this is giving the team member, the one that's not that engaged, is giving them more responsibility, especially when this allows them to get involved in shaping the future of the organization or the project or even the team as a whole. So get team members engaged. The next big takeaway is that it's not always about talent. You know, don't get me wrong, talent is important, but it'll only take you so far. I've seen less talented individuals progress much further than their more talented counterparts, both in sports and in the corporate world. And often less talented team members will put in a greater effort too. You know, this is a noted thing. I think it's seen quite often. It's therefore really important to realize the relative strengths of individuals and look to grow those rather than trying to improve their weaknesses, as I said before. Obviously, there's sometimes gaps to close, and that's what you want to work on, but really focus on identifying those strengths and building on those. Use those as the foundation and build on those. My next point I'd like to make is a team requires balance. You need the dreamer, you need the doer, you need the class clown. Every team needs them, as long as they have a positive impact on the team and it's balanced. So often in the corporate world, we'll do things like the Belbin team members test, which will identify individuals in the ideal role that they could form in a larger team. It's exactly the same in a sports team. You know, again, one of those big lessons that you can take straight off the sports pitch and into the boardroom. The next point I'd like to make is that some people like to lead and others are happy to follow. You know, even looking at the youth rugby, youth sports, even before the age of 14, you know, where the team that I coach currently is at, natural leaders begin to emerge. And the same is true in an organization. And your job as a leader is to develop other leaders. not necessarily followers. So there's an important distinction there. If you're a good leader, people will naturally follow you. And, you know, those are the sorts of people and the skills you need to identify early on and begin to develop those. I guess the last big point I want to make is that you cannot win without an aligned team. You know, whether this is sports or work, everyone needs to be moving in the same direction. You need to make sure that everyone knows and understands what the goals of the team are or the project or the organization. And you need to repeat this often because people tend to forget, you know, in any situation. It may seem obvious, but people do forget. So I think, you know, this is probably the biggest takeaway. You know, you could have the team made up of the best individuals, individually the most talented in the positions they play or the roles they fulfill in an organization. But if they're not working together, moving in the same direction, set out on the same goal, it's not going to be possible to win. So, you know, really, really important. So I think, you know, in summary, and of course, I'd be keen to kind of hear any feedback and opinions on this. You know, being placed in a leadership or coaching position is really a fantastic opportunity, but it's also a lot of hard work. And, you know, sometimes some days are worse than others. Absolutely. Last night, coaching a team of 14-year-olds was incredibly demanding. Get to thinking, you know, is this really the place I want to be? You know, it takes a lot out of you, but it can be equally rewarding. It can be even more rewarding. And I suppose it's really, you know, the more you put in, the more you get out. It sounds a bit cheesy, but it's absolutely true. And it's when you start to see the results of the effort and investment that you put in at the end of the season or the end of the year, or even coming away with a win against a team that your team has never won before, or achieving that project outcome, or hitting a big goal in the organization, hitting a revenue target, hitting a retention target, whatever it is, that's where you start to see the efforts of your work realized. And, you know, it helps you then realize what an opportunity being a leader or a coach is. So, you know, absolutely, where to from here? I think, you know, it's absolutely recognizing those takeaways. And as a leader or a coach, to continue your leadership and coaching journey as well, recognizing the things that you don't know, understanding where your weak spots are and working, you know, working not necessarily to remove those, as I've said, but focusing on your strengths as well, and continuing to grow as a coach or leader. So hopefully that's been helpful. I look forward to talking more on the topic and obviously hearing from the audience and listeners as well. So yeah, thanks for listening, and I hope to talk soon.